Blog Talk Radio.
Live from outside the studios of Teeing It Up in the swamps of Jersey, this is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling for a Monday, Labor Day, September 5th, the year 2016. I'm under the weather. Apologize. Just bear with us. Joined by the host, co-host of Teeing It Up Presents the Sunday Sprint, which has its season premiere this Sunday, Mr. Luke Morrow. Hello from 81 degrees and sunny skies.
Good evening.
You're here for two reasons. Number one, I need your opinion on the Sam Bradford era in Minnesota. And number two, we have to preview the season opener on Thursday night. So first, Sam Bradford. I mean, obviously, Teddy's injury has to be heartbreaking.
Yeah, it sure was. This is a complex situation, I think. I think there's a lot that goes into this. We could spend a lot of time talking about it and all the different angles. But, the Bridgewater thing was terrible news, of course, for Teddy, for the team, and even for us fans, for a season in which begins, or was supposed to begin, with such high expectations for this to occur when it did. And with the medical people saying that it was a less than 1% chance of occurring. So it was really such a freak injury. And coming before a year in which we had high expectations for Bridgewater. But with that said, you have to regroup, rebound, and the Vikings able to bring in Sam Bradford. And as we discussed when it happened the other day, it was a trade that at first, I wasn't really fond of as a Vikings fan, but I've really come around on it more these last couple days, reading more on it, looking into it, checking the numbers, the film, all that sort of stuff. And in the end here, as we stand less than a week before week one, assuming Bradford stays healthy, I think I like the move, and I'm very excited to kick off the season Thursday, but for the Vikings Sunday for a number of different reasons.
We're going to talk about this more on Sunday, the actual impact of Sam Bradford and what this means starting with week one. But in terms of the injury itself and who else you could have gotten, Mark Sanchez was out there, the Giants signed Josh Johnson today. Was there anybody else that could have or eventually did become available that you would have preferred?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think realistically speaking, I don't think so. I had mentioned A.J. McCarron to you, but I mean, he's a good backup quarterback, and there's a reason why the Bengals don't want to get rid of him. So to be able to pry someone like that away would take a lot more than what it took for someone like Bradford. So all things considered, a week out from the start of the season, to be able to get a starting quarterback from another team while only having to give up draft picks, I think it was a good move. I'd rather have him than Sanchez, even though Sanchez wouldn't cost any draft picks. I don't care about the draft picks. I'd rather have him than Josh Johnson. And I'd rather have him than Aaron Murray was another name that was floating around. So, yeah, I think all things considered, he was really the best option. And I think the Vikings did a good job because when the discussions originally began with the Eagles, they were not only asking for a first-round pick, but also a legitimate, starter to get back as well, whether that's on the defense or what. And in the end, the Vikings didn't have to give up any players, just draft picks, which I have no problem giving that up for a starting quarterback.
All right, Thursday night. Super Bowl rematch, Denver, Carolina, the start of the Trevor Siemian era. On paper, this should be a Panthers win, shouldn't it?
Yeah, and I think it will be. But it'll be interesting because what we saw in the Super Bowl last year and even from that whole playoff run from that Broncos defense was exceptional. So now you have a lot of months in between, and we'll see what take two offers for Cam Newton against this very talented defense. Now it's a different Broncos team, mainly at the quarterback position offensively, but the defense is still very talented. And if they can slow down Cam Newton, they can hang in the game. But on paper, I think it's maybe not a large win necessarily for the Panthers, but I think it's a clear Panthers victory Thursday. I'm just curious to see what we get from that Bronco quarterback position.
You ready for another season in the Sunday Sprint?
What's that?
You ready for another season of the Sunday Sprint?
I have been ready since Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, come on. You can't have missed me that much.
All right, maybe like 2 weeks afterwards. I needed like 2 weeks off, and then at that point I was like, all right, I'm good to go again.
That sounds more like it. Luke, I'll see you Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time.
Looking forward to it.
All right, time to talk some fantasy, amongst other things, and another person who's under the weather. Please welcome Mr. Daniel Flecka. Hello, sir.
Hey, man. How you doing?
I could be better, but that's okay. We're both powering through on this Labor Day Monday. Continue with the Vikings theme from a fantasy perspective. How do you view Sam Bradford in Minnesota?
If it was me in any type of standard league that you're in, 10, 12, 14 week, teams, I'd stay away from him. He isn't being brought in to air it out. He's there to manage the game. You know, they're going to rely on Peterson. They have some decent weapons, but even if they wanted to air it out, I can't think of a wide receiver on that team that's worth what that type of, you know, flyer in that case. Before I'm grabbing Bradford, I'm grabbing a guy like Stephon Diggs. But, you know, Bradford has proven to be a mediocre quarterback at best in real life and in fantasy. So if I had to really ride with Sam Bradford, then that's not a decision I'm willing to make.
Isn't it weird to say in real life and fantasy?
I mean, when you look at it, last year you thought that, you know, myself included, that he would have an opportunity to establish himself as a middle-of-the-run quarterback. He had the offensive system that played to his strength, get rid of the ball quick, open up the field. You know, DeMarco Murray was supposed to be a running back that was supposed to take some of that load off. It just didn't click for him for whatever reason. I don't really see that happening again in Minnesota. If he had any fantasy value, it might be next year. But then again, who knows? You know, trading a quarterback right before a season starts or in the middle of the season is usually something you don't see too much in the NFL, and there's a good reason why. You know, learning playbooks, learning timing, chemistry, route trees that are being run. I just can't really see Bradford going out there and giving you more than 3,000 yards and 15 touchdowns in the season.
Let's now flip it the other way. Carson Wentz was named the Eagles starter today. What do you see happening there in terms of is Wentz somebody who people should be looking at fantasy-wise?
Again, I'd stay away from him, too. I mean, when you look at it, Philadelphia, the reports that have been coming out from training camp is, you know, who are they going to throw to? Who is jumping out and taking hold of that wide receiver position? Yeah, they got Jordan Matthews. Zach Ertz is a popular sleeper in the tight end position, but overall, you know, they could be out their top offensive lineman. Apparently, he might be playing because they're still hearing his appeal, but if I have Carson Wentz on my team, you know, it's in a dynasty league, and a regular, you know, DFS or a regular fantasy lineup, you know, stay away from him. There's plenty of other quarterbacks that you could take.
Talking to Danny Flecka here about fantasy football. All right, here we go. 4 days away from week one. Is it 4 days? Yeah, it's 4 days from the opener. I can't do math today. You know, everybody knows that Aaron Rodgers and Adrian Peterson are good fantasy people to have on your team. Who's your sleepers for 2016, and who's your duds?
So I'll go, you know, position by position. As far as, you know, quarterbacks are concerned, it is a deep position this year. I like guys like Mariota, Carr, and Winston to give you the most value. Not to say they're going to be a top 10 position player at the quarterback level position, but those are guys that are being taken in later rounds. And with wide receivers being so heavily targeted, being able to wait on a quarterback that could give you, you know, 3,500 to 4,000 yards and possibly 30-something touchdowns, to get a pick like that in the 10th round, 12th round is a good value. As far as wide receivers concerned, going off, you know, as far as sleepers, I really like Marvin Jones in Detroit. Detroit's looked pretty good this preseason. Stafford has somewhat found his ability to hit the short pass instead of just launching it, which we saw a lot with Megatron there. I think that him and Tate are going to be a really good duo up there. Plus, they have good options out of the backfield as far as passing is concerned. So I think Jones will have a good year there. Running back wise, I wish I had a better pick, but as far as a sleeper is concerned, I really like Duke Johnson up in Cleveland. He caught a lot of passes last year for them. Hugh Jackson, despite the situation he's in there, he is a good offensive mind. Bernard and Hill, had really good years under him. They weren't always in the same time, but he was able to get the most out of those guys. I think that Cleveland's going to be a fun fantasy team. Like, you have RG3, Duke Johnson, Josh Gordon. Those guys, I think Duke Johnson can give you some stuff in a flex spot with, PPR league. And tight end, really after Gronk, there's a big fall off there. But if I had to pick, a tight end that I personally love and always target, is Delaney Walker in Tennessee. He was one of the top tight ends last year in fantasy. I don't see that really changing this year unless he gets hurt. But Mariota likes to work the middle of the field and those intermediary routes, and Delaney Walker has that athleticism to also possibly break one.
And then we move on to the defense.
Defensively, after Seattle really shouldn't really be taking a defense any earlier than round 13, but Oakland is a defense that I like a lot this year. Good up front, pass rushers. You got Khalil Mack. They signed Bruce Irvin during the offseason. They're more athletic and have a lot of speed than people think. They have some good corners. They picked up Sean Smith in the offseason. Carl Joseph was their first-round pick out of West Virginia. I think that defense could surprise some people. They're fast, guy that can get you 15 to 20 sacks possibly. And on top of that, Jack Del Rio is a defensive guy at the end of the day. You can argue how good of a coach he is, but defensively I think that they'll get a lot more points than maybe some of these other teams that are being taken, like Houston and Kansas City.
It's interesting when you get the kickers and you see Robbie Gould was cut last night, and Robbie, spent so much of his career in Chicago. Kickers are a very weird thing. They're a very, Malone, any sleeper kickers?
I guess when you target a kicker, you're looking for a kicker on the best offense. Really someone that's going to get you, kickers' values based off of the offenses they play on. Extra points, I think in a couple of years they might be non-existent, given the opportunity possibly to go for 2 points. But if you're looking for kickers, usually taking the ones on the best team. So, Gostkowski, Hauschka, Justin Tucker has been a reliable, accurate kicker. Dan Bailey in Dallas. But one of the more underrated kickers last year, too, was Kent Zaro out in Arizona. They have a high-flying offense. They're in the red zone a decent amount of times and can't always score a touchdown. So he's a good value pick, in the last round.
No matter what they do for extra points, we will always need kickers for field goals. Duds, who should we be avoiding? And please don't say Ryan Fitzpatrick.
I would avoid, Jamal Charles. It's recently come out that he might not play the first week or two, and H30 running backs are usually, people you don't want to invest in. I would be avoiding him. He's been going in the second round in some of the drafts I've seen and done myself, but that was before the news came out that he wasn't playing. But, Jamal Charles is somebody that maybe I would stay away from a little bit. It's a quarterback position. I'm not a fan of Cam Newton. I think that the year he had last year was phenomenal, given everything he was able to do there. But I think that when you score 10 rushing touchdowns, to have that ability to do that again in back-to-back years is hard to do. I think that he's going to want to air it out a little bit more. And we saw in the Super Bowl that if you put pressure on him and rattle him a little bit, he's not that accurate of a passer. So Cam Newton is the number one QB right now. I'm not valuing him there. I'd rather have a guy like Rodgers or Brady for the year. Wide receiver.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. What's up?
No. I was going to go the other direction, which is how do you value somebody like Brady who's going to miss 4 games?
when you look at a fantasy season, you have, you know, 13 weeks, and if you're lucky enough to make it to the playoffs, you know, another 3 weeks on top of that. You look at the Pats' schedule, you know, after really the first 4 weeks, he has a favorable schedule. He has probably some of the best weapons overall in the game. He's consistent. He doesn't throw picks. He doesn't fumble the ball. I think if I had the chance to take Brady in the sixth or seventh round and then pair him up with another quarterback like a David Carr or Jameis Winston, depending on the schedule, I'd rather go that route than reach for somebody in round three that could maybe get 10, 15, 20 points more than someone who's missing the first four games. So a guy like Brady, too, you want to take into account the FU mode he's going to be in. He's going to come out. I think they're going to sling it around. I wouldn't be surprised if he averages 350 yards a game and puts up close to 30 to 35 touchdowns, even with missing four games.
It's a big, big ask. Keep going on. Sorry, but if there's anybody that can do that and have that kind of production, obviously, is Tom Brady. Keep going now with your duds.
Wide receiver, I think I'm staying away from anybody in Denver. You guys were talking about that briefly. I don't see it in Denver this year. I think they're going to be a better team. I think when you look at it, Peyton Manning really held them back last year, but Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, I think, are going to have a tough time having that type of production where you're able to say, I can ride these guys every single week. I think they might have some big weeks. I think that they still are productive from a real-life standpoint, but if you're looking for a wide receiver one or wide receiver two, those are the guys that I stay away from. I just don't know what you're going to get out of Simeon or Paxton Lynch. It's an unknown commodity back there. It's just not something I want to go with into for the whole year.
Yeah. Any other
and then tight ends, it's really, again, it's a weird position to be drafting for if you're doing fantasy. You know, if you don't get a guy like Gronk, you're really out of luck. But I'm staying away from a guy like Jimmy Graham. I know people are taking late flyers on him, but he looked like a lost entity last year there. I think he'll be in a lost entity again if he does end up playing this year. I think Seattle has enough weapons besides him to be competitive, and he just did not look comfortable last year in that system, and I can't see him being somebody worth taking and then holding a roster spot for him until he gets back.
I am with you on that one. That trade from a real life and a fantasy perspective is just really weird. It didn't pay off for the Saints, and it didn't pay off for the Seahawks. So that was just some weird confluence of situations there where I don't think that trade has yet accomplished, you know, what it was set out to do for either team.
Yeah, I think at the tight end position, when you take into consideration the type of quarterback like Russell Wilson, they don't need to utilize their tight ends because they can extend plays. And when they extend plays, the tight ends are usually – lost in that fray. You know, they're looking to go deep. Wide receivers looking to come back. Tight ends have, more extensive route tree than in the past, but tight ends are a lot, well, usually based off of timing routes, and that's why guys like Gronk, guys like Jason Witten and, you know, Travis Kelce are better options because their quarterbacks, while they do a good job of finding the open guy, if they're lined up and they're open, they're usually going to go to them. And a guy like Russell Wilson, if his eyes are coming off of his primary target, he's looking to extend the play, and I don't think that really benefits a tight end, especially one that's as skillful as Jimmy Graham.
Are we here 10 years from now talking about fantasy football?
I think so. I think it's the one commodity the NFL has that they can't really ruin. But I don't want to say that because they probably will. And the only way to get any fans that aren't really hardcore fans of fantasy football, of football, is for gambling and for fantasy. I think that that's the one thing that they can't really mess up. As long as their product is there, I think it's going to be something that people keep doing. Fantasy sports in any sport, basketball, hockey, baseball, are around because people enjoy doing it. And as long as it's an available option for people, then I think it's going to be here. If the NFL does get its hands on it, then it might be a little different. But I think overall fantasy, season-long fantasy, is going to be here. If things like DraftKings and FanDuel are around in 10 years, I'm not going to say I'm going to be surprised, but I'd be a little more likely to say that that would be gone rather than actual fantasy football.
Sleeper team for 2016. For me, I wonder if this is the year the Jaguars finally take a step up.
I would think so. Do I have faith in that? No. It's still a lot of inexperience on the defensive and offensive lines. They do have some really intriguing players on the outside, like Allen Robinson and Jalen Ramsey, who I thought was the best player in the first draft this year. I mean, the first round ago this year. Really like what they have there, but I just can't see it. I think if you're looking for a team from the AFC, sleeper team, I'm going out west to Oakland and San Diego. I think those two have a more legitimate shot of making the playoffs this year than a team like Jacksonville.
You know, it seems like it's, getting really close to Oakland hosting a playoff game for the first time forever, and that's going to be one heck of a scene. How do you think this Los Angeles thing works out?
I think the NFL did exactly what they wanted to do. They had leverage every single time a team wanted to move there. They finally lost leverage in the sense that they were willing to let a team move there, but they had to pay it. What's a $500 million relocation fee? I think if I'm a player out there, it's awesome. I'm in L.A., but they don't have a home yet. They're going to be using the U.S. Was it the Rose Bowl or the Coliseum?
Coliseum.
They don't have a home. And, as an NFL player, I'm a little, you want to be consistent. You want to have a routine. I think that would probably upset me a little bit, but how can one of the biggest markets in this country not have an NFL team? That's a little odd that it lasted for 20-something years. So I think it'll be good for the the league and for the city itself. But as far as seeing a contender come out of L.A., I don't see that happening for another 5-10 years possibly. That team is just a mess. And Jared Goff looks like he's made of porcelain. Every time he was dropping back in the preseason and getting hit, he had something new come up.
It's an adjustment. It's really an adjustment to getting yourself ready to be an NFL quarterback. How does Jimmy Garoppolo do during these four weeks?
Living up in Boston, hearing the talk radio and hearing the venom that comes out of people's mouths up here, I think that they're going to be in for a surprise. I think that the Patriots did everything they could to not put anything on tape. This preseason, I think that everything they did was by design. As much as people like to say, it's the Belichick way, I think that he did everything on purpose. It didn't help that Brady was being, I think, a terrible teammate for the last couple of weeks. But you have to keep in mind, too, he was playing without his top tight end, his top wide receiver. Amendola just got back. I think Chris Hogan is going to be a big key for them this year. I think that they could go 3-1, and the one game I think they lose is the Buffalo game, not the Arizona game. I think that the Buffalo game is the one that's going to cost them in those four games. But I think that he's going to be able to do what he has to do. I think they have a good defense, one of the better defenses in the league that people will talk about. And when you're playing and you're seeing Bill Belichick line up across from you and you're the opposing coach, you have to know there's something coming. Whether or not you know what it is, he has enough knowledge and wrinkles that he puts into his game plan each and every week that can help spur a drive or turn a drive in a different way, whether it be with an interception or a big third down stop. So I think Jimmy will be just fine. He's not going to light it up. I don't think he's going to be given four touchdowns a week, but I think he'll do enough for them to win at least three of those games.
Real quick, how has Brady been a bad teammate?
I just think his overall body language has been a little shoddy on the sidelines, sitting down with your arms closed, not talking to the guy that's playing. You know, I get it. He was a sixth-round draft pick, and we hear all the time, number 199, yada, yada, yada. But in my opinion, he did everything that's happened himself, and he's just got to be a better professional. I think if he had the opportunity to do it all over again, I would like to say that he would have treated the last 4 weeks a little bit differently. But taking snaps from somebody that's going to be playing the first 4 weeks when you're 16, 17-year pro and an all-time great is a little selfish. I think they should have held it back a little bit with him, but when you're him and you're basically a god up here in New England, you can what do you say if you're the coach? You know, you gotta say, okay, Tom, we'll let you do what you want to do. But I think that he's been a little bit of a baby, in my opinion.
It's hard. It's hard to find that balance between working and playing too many reps during the preseason and then not getting enough and letting Jimmy get his work. Final thing, you love playing your flag football. What offense, as we sit here 4 days before week one, would you like to be the quarterback of the most?
Probably Green Bay, if I had to say. They just have a good system there. Good wide receivers. They draft well. They seem to know what they're doing. And when you get to play for a franchise like that, I think anybody would like to do that. I mean, it's nice watching a guy like Aaron Rodgers, you know, throw the ball around and see how he manipulates the defense to give him what he wants. But, you know, from top to bottom scheme and possession, I mean, weapons, I think Green Bay has probably one of the top units in the league.
You pumped for Thursday?
Yeah, it's an interesting game to start off. I think right now the Panthers are 3-point favorites out in Denver. I like Denver to cover, but I think Carolina squeaks out like a 17-16 win.
Will I feel 100% by Thursday?
I hope so. I hope I am. Otherwise, I'm not going to work.
That's Danny Flecker. He talks football with us. You've got, let's see, we've got, let me look at the clock here. We've got 2 minutes to talk about golf in 120 seconds and end the show on time. What do you think?
Well, yeah, go for it.
All right. So Rory McIlroy, Mr. I can't putt, I can't do anything. New putting coach, dumps Dave Stockton, goes a different direction. Lo and behold, puts his brains out, especially today when he shot 65. Finishes the week 7th in strokes game putting. First time in his career, he's first in driving distance and first in putting average. And lo and behold, wins the Deutsche Bank Championship. I, in my fantasy preview for this week, said don't play him for a while. Number two, he said that his goal was to be ready for the Masters next year, which is in April. A Super Bowl champion will have been crowned by then. And lo and behold, he goes out, comes from six back, looks at the field, and shoots 65. It is a great sign for him, B, good for golf, and C, really bad news for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Because if his putter stays hot for the next 4 weeks headed into Hazeltine, this is a big, big, big benefit for the European Ryder Cup team. Because this is a team that has a bunch of rookies, went with the veterans for their captain's picks as we covered last Tuesday, and really needs their vets to play like veterans. And that's what Rory did today, getting his 12th PGA Tour victory. Danny, I thank you.
Oh, no problem. I didn't know. I saw McIlroy was coming up. I didn't know he sealed it. Good for him.
That coverage you probably flipped by was on tape today.
I know the Sports Hub up here was there every single day this week for at the Deutsche Bank. So I heard I saw an interview with Zach Johnson. He was on Friday.
Very nice.
All right, man.
Really,
well, you
job.
Take it. Yeah, you take it easy, all right?
You got it. Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Luke. We'll see you Sunday for the Sunday Sprint. Have a great week, everybody.